The Pope did not read Luther's writings. He preferred poetry to theological discussions. And a single German priest surely posed no threat to the use of indulgences to fund worthy projects, let alone to the church itself. But Luther seemed to be challenging the church's authority in a broad sense, and Leo knew that an unchecked heresy could become the center of a sect. Better to silence Luther before it was too late. Leo began relatively gently, asking the respected Catholic theologian Sylvester Mazzolini, usually known as Prierus, to write an official response to Luther that he hoped would frighten the priest into submission. Prierus proclaimed that the Pope was the highest authority in the Church, even higher than Scripture. In fact, that the Pope was infallible. He quoted various theological texts written over the centuries in support of this claim. He also attacked Luther personally, calling him a bastard and questioning his motives. Perhaps the German priest was angling for a bishopric. Prierus concluded with the words, "Whoever says that the Church of Rome may not do what it is actually doing in the manner of indulgences is a heretic." The warning was clear enough. Luther's response to Prierus got his attention right away. Luther wrote a text in which he mercilessly took apart Prierus's writings. The church, he argued, had failed to answer his charges and to base its arguments on Scripture. Unless its authority in granting indulgences and excommunicating heretics was rooted in the Bible, it was not spiritual in nature, but worldly, political, and that kind of authority could and should be challenged. Luther published his text alongside Prierus's, allowing readers to compare the two and come to their own conclusions. His direct quotation of Prierus, his audacious and mocking tone, and his use of recently developed printing technology to spread his message far and wide, all this was quite shocking and new to church officials. They were dealing with a clever and dangerous man. It was now clear to Leo that the war between the church and Luther was a war to the death. As the Pope pondered how to get the German priest to Rome and try him as a heretic, Luther accelerated his campaign, continuing to publish at an alarming rate, his tone ever more vitriolic. In an open letter to the Christian nobility of the German nation, he claimed that Rome had used its spurious authority to bully and cow the German people for centuries, turning Germany's kingdoms into vassal states. The church, he said again, was a political power, not a spiritual one. And to prop up its worldly rule, it had resorted to lies, forged documents, whatever means necessary. In On the Babylonian Captivity of the Church, he railed against the Pope's lavish lifestyle, the whoring among the church hierarchy, the blasphemous art Leo funded. Luther juxtaposed the righteous behavior advocated by the church with the way its cardinals actually lived. It was the Pope and his entourage, Luther charged, who were the real heretics, not he. In fact, the Pope was the Antichrist. It seemed to Leo that it was time to show real force and end this war. So Leo wrote a papal bull threatening Luther with excommunication. He also sent church officials to Germany to negotiate the priest's arrest and imprisonment. These officials, however, came back with shocking news that altered everything. In the few short years since the publication of the 95 Theses, Martin Luther, an unknown German priest, had somehow become a sensation, a celebrity, a beloved figure throughout the country. Everywhere the Pope's officials went, they were heckled, even threatened with stoning. Shop windows in almost every German town contained paintings of Luther with a halo over his head. 9/10 of the Germans shout, "Long live Luther," one official reported to Leo, and the other 10th, "Death to Rome." Luther had somehow aroused the German public's latent resentment and hatred of the church. And his reputation was impeccable. He was a best-selling author, yet he refused the income from his writings, clearly practicing what he preached. The more the church attacked him, the more popular Luther became. To make a martyr of him now could spark a revolution. Nevertheless, in 1521, Leo ordered Luther to appear in the town of Worms before the Imperial Diet, a gathering of German princes, nobles, and clergy organized by the newly elected Holy Roman Emperor Charles V. Leo hoped to get the Germans to do his dirty work, and Charles was amenable, a political creature, worried by the anti-authoritarian sentiments that Luther had sparked. He wanted the dispute over. At the Diet, he demanded that the priest recant his teachings, but Luther, as usual, refused, and in dramatic fashion, uttering the memorable line, "Here I stand, I cannot do otherwise, God help me." The emperor had no choice. He condemned Luther as a heretic and ordered him to return to Wittenberg to await his fate. On the way home, however, Luther was kidnapped and taken to Warburg Castle. The kidnapping had actually been planned and executed by his many supporters among the aristocracy. He was safe. Living in the castle under an assumed name, he was able to ride out the storm. Leo died that year, and within months of his death, Luther's ideas and the reforms that he had advocated had spread throughout Germany like wildfire. By 1526, a Protestant party was officially recognized in different parts of Europe. This was the birth of the Reformation, and with it, the vast worldly power of the Catholic Church, at least as Leo had inherited it, was irrevocably broken. That obscure, pedantic Wittenberg priest had somehow won the war.